guys, and welcome back to Make Today Count, the podcast that brings you inspiring conversations with remarkable people to help you get the most of every day and build an effective personal brand across your business, life, and everything in between. I hope you had a good week. This week, the sun's been shining here in sunny Suffolk, and we've got a fantastic guest today. It's one topic that we haven't really touched upon before, but I know that it's going to bring a lot of value to you, especially if it's been something that you've been thinking about exploring recently. So we've got the amazing Helen Wire from Advanced Hypnotherapy. Helen, how are you doing?
I'm really good, thank you, and loving the sunshine.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. It just makes you feel so much better. You sort of get up and the sun's shining, and it really makes a huge difference to your day, I think. But I'm really looking forward to getting into the conversation with you today because, you know, hypnotherapy is something I think for a lot of people, which they may have kind of heard about. They may have kind of had friends or family members which have experienced it before and had really great results. But, you know, what I'd love to do today is kind of get into conversation, kind of like a hypnotherapy 101 sort of thing about what it's all about, how it can help people in the areas that I know you help people with. And hopefully we can get some answers for people. So if they're looking at this as a possibility, it could be something that they could maybe jump into. But before we do that, what I'd love to do is I know you've got a super interesting kind of backstory about kind of how you got to where you are today in hypnotherapy. So for people that haven't come across the work you've done before, can you just give us a bit of a background as to kind of where you came from and kind of how it got you to where you are?
Well, I suppose all my life I've always been into helping people in some kind of way or another. Had a little bit of a misspent youth, so to speak, and went off travelling. So worked in America for a couple of years and got really involved in voluntary work over there. Then I lived in a mud hut in Africa in Zambia for a couple of years. Absolutely loved that. And I was working not only with, I was teaching in a little mud hut school and also just teaching English, you know, really basic stuff. And also then working for the World Health Organization. And that sounds really grand, but it was actually just going out into the villages and saying to mothers, please breastfeed your babies. You know, please don't use water from dirty ditches to, you know, with powdered milk and things like that. So got involved with doing that. Absolutely loved it. And then that taught me actually an awful lot about people, because people in different countries, we are all the same, you know, we all have the same needs, the same wants and things like that. And then I became a teacher when my children were younger. And from teaching, we became very much we had lots of student teachers come and work with us. And I think I got into coaching and things like that, sent on, you know, courses and whatever, and just thought, I love this. I really, really do. But always felt there was more to it. And that's how I then started training in hypnotherapy, left teaching, loved the teaching, really did, loved making that difference. But I think any teacher will tell you the government interference and things like that after a while just wears you down. And just decided, no, this is what I wanted to do. So I've been up and running 4 years now and have not looked back. I absolutely love what I do because I love making that difference. And yeah, it can be tiring, but I come home thinking, wow, look at what that person said, or, you know, look at the difference that I've made to that person. And that is just so, so rewarding.
Yeah. And I know the great thing about kind of the work that you do is it's always kind of focused around anxiety. That's kind of like your specialism, as it were. How have you found that kind of helps being able to kind of specialize in something that is because I guess for many people's perception of hypnotherapy, I know from before I kind of experienced it myself and have had friends that have used it, my only kind of point of reference was kind of like people on stage doing funny things on TV. Is that kind of something that you see a lot with clients when they first come for the first time, kind of their perception is a little bit different to what you actually do?
Yeah, and again, you're right. You know, they've seen it on like Paul McKenna, or they've seen people, you know, barking like dogs, clucking like chickens and things like that. I can do a little bit of stage hypnosis. Teenagers tend to love it. You know, they just enjoy that little bit, and that just breaks yeah. that kind of fear for them. But I don't use it unless somebody really would want me to. I don't use it, no, in my practice. And when I first started out, I did anything and everything because I just didn't know what to specialize in. I didn't even know if I would specialize. And as it came on, I think as it, you know, that my business grew and I began to think, this is my love. This is my passion. And you know what? I'm actually really good at it. And so all my training then went towards helping people overcome anxiety, trauma, and things like that. And without realizing, it wasn't like I sat down one day and said, I'm going to choose to be a specialist in helping people overcome anxiety. It was just more and more people came to me with the similar type issues. And then often, you know what it's like, you know, they get talking to their friends down the pub or something, and then they would recommend me or refer me to friends of theirs, you know, that were struggling. So, yeah, that's really what I specialise in, you know, the whole overcoming anxiety and trauma. And I just love it. And normally people say to me, oh, you're my last, I'm desperate, you're my last port of call, you know, because it's becoming more mainstream. I've really noticed that over the pandemic. I think people are looking for something different than, say, conventional pills or something like that. And I think also because it's a much, much faster process than more conventional things like talking therapy and things, you know, you're using a different part of the mind. Very often laugh and say to people, maybe there's somebody, but I can't believe that there is. Nobody sat down one day and goes, I'm going to choose to be anxious. You know, I'm going to choose to feel really, really rubbish. Who would, you know? Nobody has that conscious choice. It just creeps up on them because of experiences they've had, because sometimes learned behavior, sometimes a combination. So if you're then going to use something like a conscious, you know, like counselling or talking therapy, you probably would hit that dartboard, but you might not hit the bullseye. But use something, what I do, like the unconscious mind, sorting out something that developed unconsciously. It's almost like updating a program on a laptop or on a phone. You're probably going to hit that bullseye much, much more quickly.
Yeah, it's something that I'm really interested in, kind of like the mechanics around a lot of these things. And I know it'll be really helpful for those listening to kind of, you know, getting an understanding of exactly what hypnosis is and what hypnotherapy is. Can you just give us kind of like a brief kind of description around how it works and what exactly hypnosis is, please, Helen?
Okay. Hypnosis, again, I can be very geeky and all this sort of stuff. You get some people go, hypnosis is a state of pure focus and things like that. But that kind of like doesn't really mean much to me. We all go into hypnosis more times a day than we realise. Every time we daydream, you know, we're going into that kind of like just absorbed state of thinking about something lovely rather than where we are. So, you know, when I was teaching, I could tell which of my students had been tranced out. I hope it wasn't because I was really boring. But you could just see that glazed look come over their face. And I used to say to them, hey, come back to me. You've gone off with the fairies, you know. And that was then daydreaming. My husband, I often laugh and I say to him, he goes into hypnosis every time he watches sport on the TV. You know, if it's a really good football match, I won't mention Ipswich Town at the moment because I don't get the impression they're doing particularly well. But, you know, if there's a sports match or something, I can come in and just go, oh, hey, his name's Chris, and just say, hey, Chris, you know, do you want a cup of coffee? Would you like a beer or something? Wouldn't even be aware that I'm there sometimes. And then suddenly he'll look at me and go, oh, yeah, coffee would be great. You know, that's him going into hypnosis. When we drive, we go on autopilot. If we've been driving long enough that we're not having to think, oh, how do I do the gears and things like that? You know, most of us on a familiar journey can go off on, you know, can drive on autopilot and be thinking about, you know, 101 other things. That's people going into hypnosis. And so really, it's just using, and again, that I often laugh and say with people who come to me for anxiety, you've got yourself into a negative hypnotic trance, all of your own doing. You know, you're almost going around in this hypnotic, this negative hypnotic trance. So work with somebody who knows what they're doing, you know, helping you use your imagination and follow instructions. It's a bit like flipping a coin. At the moment you're on tails, I can help you flip it to heads. Another way of looking at it, think of like a rally car driver, okay? I would be like the navigator sitting beside if you were coming to see me. You are the driver. So you're in control at all times and you have to do the driving, and that's important, but you're just following my instructions and I'm showing you, you know, where you're going and helping you to do that until you can do it yourself.
Yeah, that's amazing. Funny you should mention about the driving thing, because it always kind of alarms me that, you know, when you're driving and you just, you obviously encompass some kind of state of subconscious, like you say, and then you realize that you can't remember like the past 10 miles or something from when you've driven. And that always freaks me out when we do that. But it is, isn't it? It's kind of that learnt behavior that you just automatically jump into as and when there's something that you've been doing for a long time. And whether that's driving or whether that's, you know, thinking in a negative way, it's all the same stuff, isn't it?
It is. It's like running a program, and running a program, as I say, like your laptop runs a program or like your phone does. My phone shouts at me because I forget to do updates on it, and I suddenly look and it's got, say, 16 or something like that. And, you know, that needs updating regularly so that everything works efficiently. And it's the same with what we do. It's that programming, and often it's been set up again, it's been set up for a real reason. And I always say with anxiety, although it feels really rubbish and it's really terrifying for some people, it is there to protect you, because your mind, if it can just go, do you know what, Ross, you know, if you just go, if you never leave your house again, all right, then I know you survive. That's all your mind cares about. Will you survive? So if it makes you feel so bad that you don't ever leave your house again, you'll be unhappy, unfulfilled and lonely and all this sort of stuff. But your mind just goes, well, tick that box. I've done what I need to do here. I will make sure he survives.
Yeah.
And that's that old programming, you know. So when we sort that out, then you're able to go and really enjoy things and just live a fulfilling life. And that's just amazing to see, when I get that feedback from people.
Yeah. And is it, you know, is hypnosis something that's always kind of been around for many years? Or
I think it was the Egyptians, they used it a lot for performing their kind of operations, obviously different from what we would use now, ancient Greeks, because obviously there was nothing like anaesthetics and things like that. And it's really good to see it now getting into the NHS much, much more. You know, I think there's been, I think it's West Suffolk Hospital. They have somebody, you know, that helps sometimes, because there are certain operations that I have a feeling, and I can't remember exactly which ones they are, but certain, you know, anaesthetics and that can be quite dangerous. So they will have somebody almost having an operation under hypnosis and things. And there's a lot more of that happening. You know, and even for IBS, you know, irritable bowel syndrome, it's recognised by the NHS and NICE, I believe they're called, National Institute of Clinical Excellence, as being a really, really good way of, finding freedom from IBS.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like you say, there's lots of different ways now where it's been more introduced into kind of the health space. And one that comes to mind is around, you know, pregnancies and birthing and that kind of stuff. I know that's one that's hugely popular now. Is it, when we watch kind of like the stage hypnotists and, you know, the Paul McKennas of the world and those guys, there's sometimes a process whereby they would take a group of people and they have like a not a test, but something that would maybe select people from that group that they would then take forward. And I think for a lot of people, sometimes that raises the question of, you know, can everybody be hypnotized? Is it something that we can all can be a part of? With the therapy side, is it something that some people are more susceptible to, or is it something that everyone can get involved with? It just may take a little bit longer to work with those guys.
Yeah, everybody can be hypnotized, you know, if you want to. But then I always say to people, well, you wouldn't be coming to pay me and sit in my therapy room with me unless you wanted to change.
Yeah.
But it's funny, I've just put I had a Google review left on Tuesday. Tuesday or Wednesday. I've totally lost track of days this week because of the bank holidays. And again, it said in there, I was very skeptical, but, and I have lost count. It always really amuses me. I have lost count of the amount of reviews that start with, I was very skeptical, but, and often people ask, oh, you won't be able to hypnotize me. And again, I just usually chuckle and go, but I will, actually, you know, because everybody, because we go into it naturally, like, you know, the times I've explained to you, everybody can, you know, everybody can go into hypnosis because we do it all the time. Every time we daydream, every time we, as I say, go when we're driving or something like that, if we're sitting on a train and we're just staring out the window, yeah, we're looking at the scenery, but probably our minds are creating pictures in our minds. It's all about using your imagination. And it's also a skill, you know, and actually you get better at it with each session, because it's like anything that we learn or anything that we practice. You know, we just get better at it. And people always say to me, you know, perhaps the second or the third session, oh my goodness, you know, their languages, I went so much deeper or something like that. And it's because some of the fear has gone from the first session, you know, because people sometimes are a little bit, oh, what's going to happen, and all this sort of business. And, you know, they realise just how lovely it was. If I had a tenner for every time somebody said to me, oh, wow, that was amazing after the first session, you know, I'd be living in the Caribbean or Thailand or somewhere. So it's really enjoyable at the same time.
Yeah. One of the things that I was thinking of as I was kind of setting up for today and thinking about our conversation was, you know, especially over the last 2 years, kind of, I think there's been an influx of more people that have been more open to things like meditation and those kind of things, you know, through the pandemic. Maybe they've been at home more and they've used that as a tool, either through kind of self-guided audio or something like that. Have you found that that's been a kind of a helpful kind of gateway to kind of people understanding some of this stuff, which then might then allow them to explore, you know, hypnosis maybe a little bit more than perhaps they would have done before?
I think so. I think the last 2 years, I mean... You know, I've been extremely fortunate. I've worked the whole way through. So, you know, I've worked online. I just took my business online. I was doing online a little bit before, but then obviously in the first lockdown had to go totally online. And then I have been back actually face to face ever since, but also doing some online. But for a lot of people, working from home has become a bit more of the norm, even if they're going back in, say, 2 days a week or 3 days a week. And I think for those that were furloughed, they had a lot of time. And, you know, because of that, and also, let's face it, you know, I think it was really, well, I found it challenging, you know, in terms of just life seemed to stop and things that, you know, normally just popping round to a friend's house, going out to dinner, going to the cinema, you know, that all changed. And the weather was really lovely in the first one, so it was good. But that second or third one, I lost count of how many we did, you know, that winter one, I think a lot of people found really, really challenging. And I think what it did also is it led people to explore, as you say, other things. They realised perhaps they weren't managing as well. They had more time on their hands. And they did explore a lot of alternative type therapies like mindfulness, meditation, things like that. And so I do think I've really noticed a difference from when I first started to now, especially with younger people. Actually, they're a lot more willing to do something, you know, look at something else. And that's great. I think that's a really positive step forward.
Yeah, definitely. I know one of the other things that talking about kind of preconceptions of what hypnosis may be like is when we kind of see it on TV, it's kind of as if the other person that's doing the hypnosis is kind of is putting someone under some kind of control, you know, with the old pocket watch or, you know, what we've seen on TV before. And I think that's sometimes maybe a fear of some people that, you know, I am not in control of this situation. Can you just kind of walk us through, because I know that's not the case, but what I'd love you to do is kind of walk us through that and how you are in control all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. That person, you know, that I'm working with, whether it's on Zoom, whether it's in the therapy room, they are always 100% in control. And in a sense, what I would say with hypnosis, it gives that person back control, because often when people come to see me, they feel as though their life, their feelings, their emotions are totally out of control. And again, another little sort of analogy I use is it's a bit like if you park your car and, you know, you always park it in neutral, you know, whether that's geared, whether that's automatic, you park it in neutral. And that's for a reason, because when you come back into that car, things might have changed around you and you look and you think, oh, I'm going to go into first gear here. Oh, actually, do you know what? It's safer to go into reverse. But you have the choice of what you want to do. And that's what I'm doing. I'm giving people back that choice, because otherwise a lot of people in that first couple of sessions, they come to me, it's like starting your car, I've forgotten I've left it in third gear. So you wobble around, you feel really awful and you have to react really, really quickly. Once you're back in control again, you can choose a response. And that's always much, much more healthily. You're not just firing off from that emotional state. And that person, you're right, that person can just get up and walk out of the therapy room anytime that they want. They are totally 100% in control. And again, that's really important. But people don't want to because they want to feel better. And one of the first things I always say, probably the first question I would always say to somebody when they make an initial inquiry, you know, is what do you want? Because, you know, that person knows who they might say, well, I want to feel calm. I want to feel peaceful. I want to, you know, this, that and the other. So, you know, I'm giving them back that control so that they feel like that. So does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, definitely, because I think, you know, taking things like anxiety for an instance, which I know is something that you specialise in, I think the overwhelming feeling for that person is not being in control, you know, for whatever reason that may be. And they're experiencing that, it doesn't feel like, maybe if they're having panic attacks or something like that, you know, they have periods where they're not in control. So I think probably what's appealing and what's helpful for them is for someone to guide them through that and to help them gain control of themselves through the hypnosis, because then I'm guessing that would then carry across going forward into all others parts of their lives, because they think, well, I have got control around some of these things. It's around education, I guess, isn't it? You know, just for someone that hasn't felt or hasn't known that they could feel like that, you know.
Yeah, and you're right. It has an impact on so many different parts of their lives, because it does. You know, you make a change in one area, it's a bit like throwing a pebble in a pond. You know, those ripples go out there. And also people need to know that actually, you know, a lot of the time that what they're experiencing is actually really, really normal. And one of the things, I don't know if we've got time for this, but I used to be a teacher, so I always use props and models, because I find it really much easier to explain something to somebody when, you know, so that they don't switch off and trance out. But one of my favorite toys to use is this. Okay. So have we got time just to run?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Say to people, you know, think of your mind. Think of your brain. It looks a bit like grey worms, doesn't it? And it's got like a centre parting down the middle, and you've got two distinct parts. Well, this left-hand side of the brain is your kind of, again, this is a model, this is a metaphor, but it works. This left-hand side of your brain, I can't remember all the scientific words for this. You know, when I work sometimes with some of the staff from the hospice, I used to be on their wellbeing practitioner list. And when I've got a consultant sitting in front of me and I say to them, I'm going to talk to you about the brain, and they've got, you know, medical degree and things, it's quite amusing. But they always say to me, no, I like that, I can understand it.
Yeah.
But this left-hand side of your brain is what you're using most of the time in your life. Okay, so you're using it to solve problems. You're using it to, I was using it this morning thinking, how do I get on this podcast with Ross? As I know he sent me emails, but I can't remember which one I get on. So I'm problem solving all the time.
Yeah.
With your short-term memory in there. Well, crikey, did I remember to say to Ross, you know, yes, I'm happy to be a guest on his podcast. Your language centre is in there, and your willpower. But it's probably only about 10% of what you're running, what you're working on, okay? And the other side of your brain is really, really much, much stronger. That's your emotions, and your emotional brain will win hands down in any situation to keep you safe. The bit that goes through the middle there, that joins the two parts of the brain, is the amygdala. And I often laugh and say, this is my amygdala, and it's working for you all the time. And it's asking one question, am I safe? Am I safe? Am I safe? Now, if you're driving, if you're walking along a road or something like that, and you think, what's that noise? That sounds like a car out of control. Your little amygdala would just spike like that, and you would instantly go into fight, flight, freeze.
Yeah.
Okay. And sometimes we go into all three of those so darn quickly and almost simultaneously together, you know, and it's that real response that makes us take action. Now, at that time, that thinking side of your brain shuts down. That's why people, when they go, oh, I feel so irrational, oh, I can't understand, you know, I can't get my words out or something like that. Well, no, you're not going to. The thinking side of your brain shuts down. Doesn't want you in your car looking at this car going, oh, I wonder if that car's going 100 miles an hour or is it going 70? I wonder if that car's the new BMW or is it the new Hyundai? You know, by the time you'd have had those thoughts, you'd have been crashed into. It's a bit like, it goes back to dinosaur times. You know, I would have been safely in my cave cooking. You would have been outside there hunting and gathering, you know, saw a dinosaur, fight, flight, freeze. And it doesn't want, it just wants you taking an action. It doesn't want you going, I wonder if that dinosaur, I wonder if it's a herbivore or a carnivore. Okay.
Yeah.
Because by then you'd have been dinner, you'd have been eaten and something like that. So it goes, you know, it's a survival mechanism. Now, if we carry out the same sort of thing over and over again, like a repetitive pattern, what happens is the amygdala goes up and it comes down, it goes up and it comes down. And in the end, it thinks, do you know what? This is too much like hard work. I'm just going to stay about here. I need to make sure Ross is on high alert all the time because there's obviously so many threats out there to his life. And then we're feeling really, really horrible. Okay. But you can see once it's here, anything that happens doesn't take long at all to get to there. So I often say to people, our job together, you know, whoever I'm working is just to calm things down, bring that back again so you're in control. So then you can actually work out, no, that actually is something. What I say is we're reducing the irrational, unnecessary anxiety. Somebody said to me once, I want you to take away all my anxiety. I went, no, I'm not going to do that. You need some to keep you safe, you know, and things like that. So it's taking the irrational, unnecessary stuff away. Once this goes back down to there, you're in control and you're able to make a choice about how to respond to something, you know, and that's the really important thing. And it can be done much more quickly than people actually realize, because our minds pattern match all the time back to events where we've felt the same kind of way. They might not be the same situations or the same events, but your mind, every time you feel fearful. So I guess that's where that metaphor of that person's got a lot of baggage or something like that comes from.
Yeah.
Because you're not only dealing with the here and now, you're dealing with the here and now and all the stuff, you know, all the times you felt like that before.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point to make there when you said that for many people that have some challenge that in which they're kind of dealing with, there's almost a feeling that they want to take it completely away.
Yeah.
And I think that's our knee-jerk reaction is, you know, this isn't nice, I want to take it away. But, you know, especially what I've learned over the years is it's kind of like that acceptance that, you know, this is here to help you. And it's kind of like, okay, we know this is here. We know this is helping me in some way. What are the tools that enable me to help bring it down to a manageable level? And then are able to spike when we need to, you know, because what we don't want to do is to be in a situation where we're under some kind of peril and, you know, it doesn't kick in, because that wouldn't be helpful at all. I find that really interesting.
That acceptance is key. And one of the first, you know, things I say to people is almost imagine it. Imagine any kind of horrible feelings. They're just trying to make you take notice of something. Now, the more we do something and go, no, I'm going to distract myself, I don't want to think about it, it's almost like we put our fingers in our ears and go, la, 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 no, I don't want to think about it. I don't want to feel those emotions. But it's a bit like, I don't know if you've ever been on holiday and you've had a beach ball or something and you're pushing a ball under the water. Well, when you finally release that grip, that ball comes up with twice as much force as it went down with. And it's the same with our emotions. You know, we can say, I don't want to think about this. Oh, it makes me feel so horrible. And we'll do anything we can to not think about it.
Yeah.
But we have to, because eventually that just makes it, it's become so big. It sounds counterintuitive and it sounds really odd, but if we can almost learn to go, oh, hello, you're back again. Hello, anxiety, you're back again, or something like that. It's got what it needs. It's just got an acknowledgement and it just tends to fade away. Now, it sounds so simple. And the first time I was taught that, I thought, it's a load of rubbish. That will never work. And then I tried it for myself and it really, really is powerful. You know, I teach it, one of the first things to everybody I work with. And, you know, they always say, oh, that's so simple, but it's just so easy just to go, oh, hi, hello, you're back again. Doesn't mean to say we invite it in. Doesn't mean to stay. We say, it's almost like we say, come and have a cup of tea with us. It's just recognizing that it's there.
Yeah, I think that's huge. And I totally agree. You know, even when you're talking about, you know, sharing challenges or problems with other people, you know, for a lot of people these things come because we, like you say, we hold down that beach ball, we don't want to talk about it, so we become so consumed because it's we've only got it within ourselves and we've got no kind of outlet to deal with it. And, you know, similar when you're talking to someone, you know, kind of when it gets spoken about, it takes the power away from it. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? Because it doesn't allow you to deal with it on your own. You start to talk about it more and then it depletes and depletes and depletes. And I think exactly the same. I think one of the things that really kind of astounded me when I start to learn more about kind of hypnosis and kind of hypnotherapy was the fact that it can be used for so many different, you know, things. And I know we're going to speak especially about some of the things that you specialize in, which I want to get into. But I just want to talk about, you know, some people think it may only help with anxiety or it may only help with some of these things, but there's a vast amount of things it can help with. Would you say it kind of anything that's of a challenge that you might have can be kind of helped?
Absolutely. I mean, the recognized one generally is stopping smoking or something like that. But, you know, it can also, this time of year, we're end of April. So very soon my phone will start ringing. I'll get so many calls from teenagers or mums of teenagers around exam stress or things like that.
Okay.
Because that's a kind of anxiety, but it's very specific. I work with a dental practice in town. They send me people who have dental fears and phobias. There's a lot of people that have, and it's trying to think, I call it fear or phobia of sickness, emetophobia. You know, and I see a lot of, funnily enough, that starts in October. It's almost like I can almost plan my year, but that starts in October and it goes through to about February, March time. But I guess that's when more bugs are around, aren't they, in the winter time. Interviews, you know, get a lot of, for people doing public speaking for weddings or interviews, and obviously fear of flying. Now we're able to travel again, that's all coming back. Sports as well, you know, some people can get really anxious about for their performance around sports if things haven't gone particularly well. Again, they can get themselves into that, oh my goodness, what if it happens again, what if it happens again, and what if it happens again. And improved concentration, focus, motivation, confidence, you know, all those type of things, because they are all quite interrelated. But I think one of the things that, again, I love is sometimes people don't always tell me about something that's going on with them. So they'll come to me for one thing, and then two or three sessions that, or just as we're finishing, they'll go, oh, do you know what, you know, since we've started doing this, this has changed or that's changed. But, you know, pain tends to be quite a big one with that. I do work specifically with pain and things, but if you think about it, when we get anxious, when we get tense, we do, I mean, I'm going to really exaggerate it, but we kind of hold ourselves much more like this. So we're more likely to get aches and pains and things. And I think one of the byproducts of hypnosis, most people tend to say, oh, I do feel much more relaxed afterwards. You don't have to have relaxation, but it just seems to be a byproduct of it. And they're sleeping better and things. So sometimes, you know, pain can, you know, I've seen people go, oh, I had such pain in my knees and that's all gone now. And I just find that fascinating and amazing how... our minds and bodies are just so connected. That there's a really amazing book, if you haven't read it, I really suggest you do. It's called The Body Keeps the Score. And I think it's a Belgian guy wrote it. And again, he's talking very, very much about the whole relationship between, you know, you can't just treat one thing in isolation. It's a whole holistic approach. And, you know, our mental state has such an impact on our physical state. And there's actually a doctor and his name, no, I was going to say it escapes me, but I've just remembered him. He's called Dr. Maudsley, back in Victorian Edwardian times. And he was one of the first, you know, clinicians really to recognize that the mind and body were really connected. And he had a lovely phrase, and he said, emotions that can't be expressed through tears may cause other organs to weep. you know. And bear in mind, back in Victorian Edwardian times, we were very repressed. We didn't talk about emotions and things like that, you know. And I thought that was so, you know, enlightened to think about that way back in those times. I think most of his colleagues thought he was deluded, you know, thought, you know, because they were, no, this is how we deal with things. But, you know, he knew quite a few things, I would suggest, that, you know, just from his practice, that he'd recognised that they are so interrelated.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a really great point. And so I've had my own experiences with that in the past, whereby I used to get really severe neck and shoulder pain. Mm. And that used to come and go at various times. And I went to a chiropractor, I went to tried all these different things, you know, how I was sleeping and all that kind of stuff. But in the end, it was around periods of time when there was a high level of stress.
Yeah.
And that's how it came out into my body. And I think that's interesting and important for the viewers or the listeners to think about, is it may not just be something that you consciously know what the problem is. You know, maybe you've got a leg that's hurting, or maybe you've got a shoulder that's hurting, or maybe you've got something that's that. Is to, you know, my encouragement would be to take a step back and think about those periods of time which you may have those challenges, and could it be something else? Because you know, I think it's really amazing, that kind of mind body connection, and you know, the impact that it can have. And I want to also, you know, touch upon some of your kind of main areas of focus around kind of anxiety and trauma as well, which is very closely linked, as we've spoken about before. But just to kind of dive into that, now you've mentioned there that anxiety was something that a lot of people have come to you with, so it's almost become, by no fault of its own, kind of like your speciality, because it's something that you enjoy and that kind of thing. With anxiety, is there a kind of a certain point that people get to when they think, I need to come speak to you for, is it the fact that they've kind of tried other things, or is it they've heard about you that you can deal with anxiety? What's the kind of the trigger for people coming and having a chat?
Yeah, both. You know, you said sometimes people, I would say probably 90% of the people I work with are referrals from other people. And I think because, you know, I'm online now, so I do Zoom. Mm. So I work, I often laugh and say, oh, I'm working in London today. I'm not, I'm sitting in Suffolk here, but I'm working on Zoom. And again, you know, it's referrals from friends or things like that. Worked in Pakistan last year, and again, that was somebody I'd worked with, somebody in the Oxford office, you know, and they said, and that, you know, obviously we're having a colleague to colleague chat, and they said, you know, this person's helped me, you know, she might be able to help you. So that's how a lot of referrals come. But also I get other people that just go, I'm desperate, please help, you know, and I've tried everything else and nothing particularly has worked, that you're my last port of call. Because again, it's not really pushed, it's not really out there, and you know, it's getting more out there, but sometimes people will come to me, what I call in desperation, and that's okay, you know, because I often laugh and say to people, it's when you get to that point of, I can't do this anymore. That's when people are willing to change, you know, and that's what it's all about. Right, let's change those patterns you've got now and get it to something that which will help you, you know, move forwards in life. I would rather have somebody come to me desperate than I would have somebody what I call dithering on the fence, you know, sort of thing, because that point of, I just don't want to feel like this anymore hasn't quite been reached. You know, so that, you know, the person, it's like anything that you want to get involved in, you know, anything in life, you know, when you get to that point, you go, I really want this. Guess what? You know, you work towards it. You put all your energy into making that thing work, whatever that thing is.
Yeah. And I guess also, you know, we spoke about anxiety before, is kind of like the physical sensation of how we're feeling in any moment. But often, like you said, that comes from maybe an event or something that's maybe happened in the past. Someone said something to you. You've experienced something that's been negative. And we could say that that's kind of was the trigger point or the turning point in you turning, you kind of building that muscle to get yourself in that higher state of more alert, which then brought on the anxiety or all those feelings and that. How does hypnotherapy help you to maybe revisit those points in time And kind of, is it that we acknowledge them and kind of form a different view of them through our subconscious, or how does that kind of work? I'm really interested to know that.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. We revisit them, but momentarily. A lot of work I do with people is what I would call relatively content free. So I've worked a lot with soldiers with PTSD, you know, that obviously they've seen some horrendous things. I've worked with a lot of women who've been, say, domestically abused or raped or sexually abused. Now, the more you just keep going over, and, you know, a lot of people come to me and go, I'm so fed up of talking about it. I just want things to change, because the danger is in talking about it. You're almost feeling it like it's happening again. And so you're getting the same feelings and sensations in your mind and body as when it happened the first time. So, you know, you can't deny it happened. Of course you can't. But I always say to people, it's a bit like, think of it a bit like a bow and arrow. We may need to momentarily go back in the past to be able to reassess it, but lose the emotion surrounding it to move forward. So a bit like a bow and arrow, you're pulling the string of the bow back to reassess it and move forwards into the past. And you don't have to dwell on it, but yeah, you can change things. And that gives people a huge amount of relief and release from it. In our minds, everything that's ever happened to you, Ross, is in your mind somewhere. Okay. Now, mostly it's balanced between the emotional and the rational sides of the brain. But when we have something really traumatic, and bear in mind, trauma can mean different things to different people. For some people, yeah, trauma is a big spider walking across the room. Mm. You know, it doesn't have to be something of a really big, it's just any time that we felt really scared, you know, that is trauma. You know, sort of thing. It doesn't have to be what I call trauma with a capital T, you know, say like a terrorist incident or something like that. But when that's lodged here, the next time we feel a similar response, we're remembering all those feelings and sensations. When we can kind of, and I use the word almost like neutralize that. So I can never take memories away. And that's really important, because we actually learn something, you know, from every single situation. But when we can take the emotional impact of that away, so it purely becomes a memory rather than a memory that when we think about it now makes us feel, you know, feel uncomfortable or upset or anything like that, we can move on from that event. I'm trained in something called IEMT, which is eye movement therapy. And that's one of the quickest, fastest way I know to help people overcome trauma. There's loads of different ways to do that in the work that I do, but that's tends to be my go-to one, because it can reduce the impact of something in about, often, 5 minutes, and people are absolutely amazed when that happens, because I tend to grade things 0 to 10.
Yeah.
So I might say to you, okay, Ross, you know, tell me about a memory that you've got from, and it can be from 2 weeks ago, from 10 years ago, from, you're probably only about 30 now, aren't you? So probably I'll say 25 years
you're
ago.
You're my best friend, Helen. You're my best friend.
You know, but the time is irrelevant. But sometimes, and I always remember working with a lady, and I think my eldest lady I worked, she was 86. And she was telling me about being badly bullied at school. And as she said it, these tears were just trickling down her face. You know, I could have hugged her there and then. She was 86 and she was still thinking about it. She was still so upset about something that happened when she was 11. And I grade things 0 to 10. And I just said to her, how horrible is that memory? 0 is neutral, 10 is high. And she almost gulped and, you know, almost sobbed as she said, it's a 9. You know, and I thought, bless your heart, that's been 8, you know, sort of 70, 80 years that you felt like this. Did this particular technique with her, and we got it right down in the session to about 3 out of 10. When I saw her the following week, and I just said, you know, tell me about that. And she said, I'm able to sit here now and just think, she was a nasty little girl, actually, the one that was so horrible to me. For me. She said, but I've let that go. you know, and that is just such an amazing thing to hear, you know, so that we've still got those memories, but we haven't got the emotional charge around them that then trigger us. You know, I suppose, you know, we get triggered by events. Take the triggers away and we're much more back in control again. And I'd say that's the biggest gift that I can give to somebody. One of my trainers, you know, is amazing, and he always said, you know, the biggest gift that you will be able to give to somebody is get them out of emotional pain. And I've never forgotten that. I think he said that on one of my very first lessons, and I always keep that at the back of my mind every time I go into a session with somebody.
It's an amazing story about that older lady in the end. It kind of shows you that there's never been a greater time to have access to some of these things, you know, whether it's just from some kind of mindfulness on your phone through to hypnosis, through to, you know, other therapies and that kind of thing. You know, that for that lady, she probably didn't have access, or, you know, that there wasn't a conversation around any of this stuff through, you know, from a therapy point of view, even from a family point of view, it probably just wasn't something that was discussed. And the school probably didn't discuss it at the time because it was just kind of poo-pooed and you know, not talked about. But it just shows you how lucky we are to live in this age now where we have access to some of these stuff. And, you know, like you say, there were some of these therapies that can literally take minutes that could change something that's been, you know, harboring inside someone for such a long time.
Just to interrupt you there just for a moment, Russ, one of the things, again, to me, feedback's really, really important, and that's what helps inform, you know, what I do now. And I suppose I learned that from teaching. You know, sometimes I'd look at that class and just go, you haven't got a clue what I'm talking about, have you? And they'd look at me and go, oh, thank goodness you said that, you know. But then I was able to help say, well, what do you need from me? You know, how can I change that? How can I help that? And it's exactly the same. You know, I really always encourage feedback. And one of the feedbacks I hear time and time and time and time again is people will say to me, I didn't have to go into those memories, you know, I didn't have to talk about them. I just didn't have to just keep continuing going over and over and over them for them to change, you know. And I think that's the really key thing for people. You know, why would you want to relive horrible, horrible memories over and over again, or for a lengthy period of time? Yes, they're there. Yes, we need to deal with them, but let's reassess them, sort them out, take the emotional impact away, so they just become something that's happened. Doesn't mean to say we need to like what's happened, but it just becomes an event rather than an event that makes us feel bad.
You know, one of the things I like to talk about on the podcast is when we're talking about different kind of subjects is kind of just to kind of quash some perceptions and that kind of stuff. And there's often some things that stories we tell ourselves, myths we tell ourselves around different subjects, which might kind of stop us at that very early stage without kind of progressing further. I just want to touch upon if there's any, you know, in your field, my guessing would be, you know, like, I wouldn't be able to get hypnotized, and we've spoken about that, but maybe like I wouldn't be able to sit there for that long, or that, like, maybe I'm someone that needs to be up and doing stuff all the time. Is that one you've come across, and is there any others that kind of come to mind?
Yeah, but I would say again, I've learned this from teaching. There's no one size fits all approach. You know, I would have a class of 30. The government told me I needed to teach in a particular way, the same for all of them, or something. They would all learn in the same way. They don't. We all learn very, very differently. So every session is very tailored to that person in front of me. When I work with teenagers, I work in an entirely different way on the whole, not always, but in a very different way than I will work with, say, the lady who was 87, you know, sort of thing. Because again, it's using you and your interests and your, you know, and if you say to me, well, I don't think I'm going to sit still that long, then I would break it up for you, you know, sort of thing. Okay. Other times people might sort of say, so I have been accused before at the end of a session, and I go, you know, right, okay, so, you know, what when would be good to meet again? And they look at me and they say, I've only been here 10 minutes. And I go, actually, you haven't. You know, because sometimes you can get a real, what I call, time distortion. You know, you think of those times where you just think, oh, my goodness, you know, something you really enjoy or something can just pass, can't it, like that? Something that you're in, you're thinking, oh, when is this going to end? You know, it can take forever to when something you don't enjoy. So that can be all going on. But it's a very active process as well. And I know that sounds odd, but I will be asking the person in front of me. I always say to them, it's all about following instructions. At times I want you to use your imagination, you know, find a feeling. So they are very involved. It's not just me talking at them. They are they're involved in the process. It's a bit like, again, learning to drive. You know, the person sitting beside them, the driving instructor, is, you know, giving them instructions, but that person is still doing the driving. And it's the same with me. You know, it's not them, somebody coming in and going, right, here you go, here are all my problems, because I'll just go, here you go, back again. I'm helping you sort them out yourself.
That's great to hear, because I think, you know, with anything like any kind of therapies or you know, it's that building of trust between the person, the therapist, and the person that's coming in for that. So that's really great to hear. And I think that would be a breath of fresh air for those listening to think that, you know, there's not a one size fits all, and it will be something that's tailored specifically to your needs, your likes, your dislikes, that kind of thing, which I think will be hugely helpful when they're looking for someone. We touched a little bit at the start about, you know, over the pandemic, you kind of moved everything online, and that's something that you still do. But I think it's important to note that there may not be people that knew that you could do this kind of stuff online, you know, in the way that we're speaking today. Is it possible to get the kind of the same experience through this kind of medium, or is there a preference to being in person, or how have you found it, that kind of transition over?
Absolutely, you get the same experience whether you're online or face to face. And I think I said to you, so over the last 2 years I've worked in America, I've worked in Canada, all over Europe, because again it tends to be, or you work with a friend of mine, you know, we all know people in different parts of the world now. The biggest challenge for me is the time difference, when sometimes, because I was naive enough to think the whole world changed time zones on the same weekend. They don't. that was the biggest challenge for me. But and all over the UK as well. But people get the same outcomes whether they're at home or whether they're here. Tends to be some people have personal preference. Some people know I'm fed up of online. I want to see you face to face. Whereas others go, you know, I've somebody who geographically probably lives very close to where I work. But for her, just because of lifestyle and things, you know, she doesn't want to have to take the time to drive in, park, drive back again. So it just works for her online. And that's fine. It's just as effective online as otherwise. You know, I just finished up working with somebody in London, my last session last night. And, you know, and she said the same. She went, I cannot believe, you know, we've been 5 sessions. I'm totally free of what I came to you for. Feel so much better. And yet I've never met you. And I laughed and I said, no, I said, for all you know, I could be 4 foot tall, you know, because she's seen me from here upwards. And then the same with, you know, with me for seeing, working with her. But it's just equally as effective. Yeah. And a lot of training, a lot of, you think about just how life has changed in the last 2 years, and things that we never thought we would be able to do online, we find a way, you know. And again, as long as that desire is there, it will be fine, it will work.
I'm guessing, you know, like you mentioned there about that lady in those 5 sessions, I'm guessing the question that may come up when you have that initial consultation is kind of like, you know, how often are we going to have to meet for me to kind of do that? And I sense that the answer is going to be, you know, however long it takes to, in regards to you and how we work together and how, you know, what the specifics are around that. Is there kind of a sort of a benchmark around that, or is it just kind of like however long it's going to take for you to work through some of this?
Yeah, it is however long it's going to take. However, you know, I would say the average, I very rarely work with somebody longer than 6 sessions, you know, sort of thing for anything. Occasionally somebody will come to me for one thing and they'll go, well, look, hey, while I'm here, now we've sorted that, can I deal with this? And then can I deal with that? You know, if they're very different. So somebody might come to me for anxiety and then want to stop smoking. And then they've you know, got something very specific, like they want to be better at, you know, got an interview coming up. So that might be something slightly different. But on the whole, it's around, I would say, you know, I'd say the average is 4 to 5 sessions. And what we tend to do is the first 2 or 3, because again, when we're changing things fast, and it's like any skill that we practice, the more frequently we do those that at the beginning, we get better at it more quickly. So the first sort of two to three sessions, I tend to say within about 2 weeks of each other, people notice differences and changes from the very first session. You know, so they're really willing to come back. And then by the end, as we see those changes happen, you know, which we do, I'll suddenly go, well, how about going 3 weeks? And then by the end, so the person I say I finished up with last night, I hadn't seen her for, it was either 4 or 5 weeks, because I wanted her, and she wanted, you know, to have the confidence with, wow, this is permanent. This is a really change for life, which it is, you know, sort of thing. So so that's how we work there.
And I sense there's going to be a lot of people listening to this that think, you know, like what they've heard today and kind of think, well, maybe I should give it a try. I want to kind of hold their hand around that kind of choosing and selection process and get your help on that. In regards to, you know, if someone is looking for a hypnotherapist to work with, what should they be looking out for? What are some tips around kind of choosing someone to work with or getting in touch with those people?
I would say look at the reviews, because again, they are very, very powerful. And often people will phone me up. I don't know if you've ever watched the film When Harry Met Sally, but I always call it that moment there when they go, I want whatever she's having. Because you know, the number of times people will phone me or they'll email me and they'll say, that review that was left 2 or 3 weeks ago, that describes exactly how I feel, and I want the outcome that that person had. You know, and I know, I do have a website, and I know, though, that far more people just read the, they don't read the website, but they tend to read the reviews of it. You know, because again, that's lived experience of somebody, gosh, I was feeling like this and now this has happened for me. So I'd say that's really important to think, you know. And then I'd say again, it's with any relationship, you need to feel comfortable and confident with the person that you're working with. I don't know about you, but you think of the times that maybe you've gone to see, oh, I don't know, a new doctor or a new dentist, and you can come away and you think, they really got me. They got my needs. Yeah. They got my concerns. I felt really confident with them. And another time you can walk out of the surgery and think, oh, not really sure they quite understood where I was coming from, what I wanted and things. And that's almost like your intuition guiding you and telling you, you know, that. So I would say, you know, and anybody that won't have a quick phone call with you, you know, I'm always happy. Somebody will phone me and go, can you just talk me through how I would help you? Or sometimes it's email conversation. Now, obviously, I can't do a whole session or spend hours of my time, but I'm always happy to chat to people for 10 to 15 minutes about how I think, you know, about what their need is and how I can help. And again, I think that allows that other person to get a feel for me, for the therapist, because there's got to be that trust there. There's got to be that confidence. Again, think of it with teachers. You know, some teachers, even if you didn't like their subject, I hated physics at school. You know, I really did. And I think half the time it's because I just didn't really gel with the teachers, whereas other subjects I might not have liked. You know, I didn't find maths particularly easy, but my teacher was just such a gem, and he did, you know, I really liked it. So I would do my best for him and he would do his best for me, you know. And I think that's all part and parcel of anyone you work with in business or you know, in therapy or anything. You know, those relationships to me are key, and that's what I think makes for a successful partnership and a successful outcome.
You know, and speaking about those partnerships, what I always love to talk about with people is kind of like kind of key moments that were really special to you, maybe with clients that you work with, and not going into kind of specifics or names or anything like that, but just anything that maybe come to mind about, you know, times you felt that you really made a difference to someone. Is there anything that sort of comes to mind with that?
Oh gosh, so many. I am known in the last session, so sometimes have a few tears myself when they when they give me feedback or something. And you really get to know those people. And I still take my hat off. You know, that one of the hardest things is to phone up or send an email and go, I need help.
Goodness,
that really, really takes a huge amount of courage. And I just take my hat off to anybody that says that. And I feel really privileged that they've come to me. You know, I really do. And I care about them and I really want that outcome. And when they've got it, it's huge. That lady we've talked about, that was a really big moment. When you hear somebody has come to you that they haven't slept for months on end because of any, you know, like soldiers with PTSD or something like that, and then they say, I'm sleeping soundly, I'm at peace with all that. You know, again, women who've been, you know, I can again think of somebody and she'd been very badly raped when she was 17, and she'd held on to that, and she was probably late 50s, I think, and she said, I can put that all behind me now and move on and live my life. You know, that is just such a even now as I'm saying it, I can feel the hairs on the back of my neck standing up, just think, oh my, you know, just how lovely for somebody. And then I think one of my I got a card once from a dog, and I remember thinking, what is this? It was this muddy footprint inside. And I was just thinking, this is just so weird. And then when I read it, and it said, because it was a guy I worked with for IBS, and, you know, he just hardly moved from his house, really, because he always needed to be near a toilet or something like that. And I remember him on the first session saying to me, in the mornings when he walked his dog, he walked what he called round the block, because he knew he was never more than 5 minutes away from his house and he could dash in and go to the loo. And after we'd finished working together, I had a lovely email from him, but he sent me a card from his dog saying, it's great, I can go down the fields, I can go to the park now, you know, because we can go further afield. And so that one, I keep that one. That's quite a treasured memory as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. You know what, I love to also ask, and I think we've sort of touched upon it as well, is kind of like, if you could kind of sum it up, what's the best thing about doing the work that you do? I kind of speak to a lot of people, and I love to just get that kind of one liner. And I think we've touched upon it, but for you, Helen, what's the best thing about doing the work that you do?
Making that difference and seeing that person free of what they came in with is just huge. You know, and as I say, I would say nearly every day, I thought it was a cliche, you know, when I first started this work or whatever, or when I, you know, people used to say, oh, I love getting up and going to work every day, or I love coming home again and things, you know, and I thought it was a bit of a cliche, but I really, really do. I wouldn't say I'm always so good at all the paperwork side of it. You know, every business has a bit of a downside, doesn't it, kind of thing. And I have to focus, you know, need my own hypnotherapy to focus more on that. But, you know, I just love that making a difference to somebody and seeing them where they want to be. It's just such an amazing, feeling. And I drive home some days just going, I can't believe how lucky I am. You know, as I say, to see that person out of emotional pain is just an amazing, you know, thing. And I just feel so privileged that I've got the skills to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Helen, this podcast is called Make Today Count. Reason being is that I loved, and my aim for the podcast was to get people into conversations around subjects which maybe they haven't come across before. And if that ignited something in them and they thought that they could maybe use that in their own lives, that they could take one step the next day. You know, we all know that sometimes we get a great idea and we want to move forward, and then we try lots of different things all at once and it just gets us nowhere. But often it's that one step the next day that kind of gets us on the right track. So for that person listening or watching over on YouTube today, that's kind of thinking, maybe hypnotherapy is something that I could get into or try, what would be that one thing? I'm guessing, you know, putting words in your mouth, it could be just be to reach out and start having that conversation with someone. But anything that you'd kind of recommend is kind of that first step for someone?
Yeah, start, as you say, just make that call, you know, make that, send that email. And I often say to people, that is actually the hardest thing. That asking for help is actually the hardest thing. But once you've done that, you know, because again, just making that call show, you know, that's inspiring in itself. It takes courage and it shows, right, I'm ready now to change that. You know, do that and just do your research on somebody that you think would be helpful to work with. You know, whether you want face to face or whether you want whether you want it online, because it can be done both ways. I would think most therapists do offer that. I don't know. You know, you tend to know your own little world. I know the people that I know do, but, you know, you'd have to see in the area you know, I don't know where all the listeners and viewers of this are from, but you'd have to look in the area you are, sort of thing. But I think most people are fairly flexible now. But please make that call, because it can be overcome much more easily than you realise. And again, I hear that back from people. You know, I didn't realise it would be such a short length of time. Because again, I think people are used to having therapy for, you know, in the big world for 6 months, a year or something like that. And they're quite shocked at how quickly they can feel so different.
Yeah. And for anyone that does want to get in touch with you directly, Helen, where's the best place to contact you?
Phone me 07795 832 740. Obviously, if I'm in sessions, leave a message, or email. It's helen@advancehypnotherapy.biz. That's B-I-Z. Or there's a contact form on my website, www.advancehypnotherapy.biz. I'm also on Facebook, also on Instagram. And again, one of those first steps during the first lockdown, especially, I made quite a few little videos of tips for mental health, for anxiety and things, you know, and you can go back and look at all of those. They're there for you, you know, because again, I worked with quite a few companies supporting their employees and things like that. So go and have a look at some of those, because that might be the first step you take, just using some of those techniques. Until you're perhaps ready to make that call.
Yeah, and guys, we'll put all those links into the show notes of the podcast, so you can just click through directly and find Helen on all those channels. Helen, I love to finish every podcast with gratitude. I think it's hugely important and something that we forget to do sometimes. So just to thank you for your time today, but also for all the work that you're doing in the world. I think your approach, you know, we spoke about before, whereby you use the ball and you use that to kind of help it in a kind of a non-medical way. And I think that's a great skill and a great asset, because for a lot of people, you know, they don't know the technicalities of these things, but putting it into a way in which they can easily understand is huge. And I think that would help so many people kind of understanding A, their own mind, but B, how they can kind of use these tools to help them as well. But no, thank you for everything that you're doing. I think it's a hugely powerful medium, and, you know, through my own experience of it. And I just thank you for all these people that you help, and, you know, especially these people that maybe have been carrying this stuff for quite a long time. And there's the ability there to maybe change it quite quicker than they think. So, yeah, thanks for everything you're doing.
You're very welcome, and thanks so much for having me on a guest. It's been really exciting.
Thank you. So guys, what we'd love you to do, has there been a moment in this podcast that you maybe thought, you know, that light bulb moment, that time when you thought, oh, that changed my perception about certain things? We'd love to hear about you. So wherever you're listening or viewing this podcast, you'll find some comments below. Leave us a comment on there, and I'm sure myself and Helen will jump on there and be able to respond to that as well. Also, if you haven't already done so, we'd love you to subscribe. So whether you're watching this over on YouTube or on all the podcasting channels, we'd love you to subscribe so you can get regular updates on all these conversations. And what we'd really love is to get a review. So if you're able to leave a review on all those places, what that means is we're able to get these conversations out to more people, and in turn spread the message, spread the information, which, you know, is my kind of goal, is to help as many people as I can with introducing them to these conversations, things they may have not come across before, which may be of helpful. But thanks again to my guest Helen, and for you guys listening, I've been Ross Dean. This has been Make Today Count, and I'll see you soon. Take care. Bye bye.